Very good. I will now call the third case on today's oral argument calendar. That is case number A23-280 in the matter of the welfare of the children of MMG and LTS. I assume that counsel are familiar with our court's procedures and specifically our court's procedures when arguing by Zoom. Each of you will have 15 minutes for your principal argument. Appellant's counsel will have an opportunity for rebuttal argument of 5 minutes. You should be able to see a time clock on your screen, one of our, if you're using the gallery view or a similar feature, you should be able to see the time clock, which will show how much time you have remaining in your argument. With that, counsel for appellant, you may introduce yourself and your client, and then you may begin your argument.
Good morning, Your Honor, counsel. May it please the court. My name is Jennifer L. Thompson. I represent Melissa Glynn, the appellant in this matter. This appeal is based on what the district court labeled somewhat of a default in the oral record and in the transcript. However, in its final order was found to be a default hearing. So it's a direct appeal from a default. And so we are somewhat limited in our argument this morning. My appellant's claim is based on the fact that she was represented by counsel. Counsel was there, made it known to the district court that she was not able to make it in person that day. The district court had the discretion to proceed with the trial by default or continue so that the appellant could appear as long as permanency timelines would be honored. This child had only been out of the home for 345 days at the time of the scheduled trial. It was would have been very reasonable and within the district court's discretion to continue the hearing so that my client could appear. However, the court chose to proceed by default. Counsel for the agency did not request to proceed by default, and the district court chose to proceed by default sua sponte, which was an abuse of discretion. Several things were procedurally mishandled and incorrect in this default hearing. The guardian ad litem was never sworn in, testified in the narrative, which is allowed for the guardian, but was never sworn in. The circumstances of the case were not, as I argued in my brief, were not proven by clear and convincing.
Ms. Thompson, what I'm hearing you argue, and I didn't think this was the gist of your case, what I'm hearing you argue is failure of due process, both in terms of witness presentation as well as the failure to appear. How is this before us at this point when your client did not appear? I mean, what are we looking at?
Certainly, Your Honor. Excuse me. It was argued in my brief that she was denied due process because it is within the court's discretion for her to, for the judge to have continued the hearing. The scope of this appeal is limited because it proceeds from a default that the findings do not support the conclusions. The error here was in applications of the standards of proof and in the failure to continue the hearing.
Didn't the district court make specific findings about the reason that the court felt that the appellant should have appeared, that the roads weren't that bad, everybody else made it, and that there was some record of not appearance by the appellant?
Right. The court did make that finding. However, appellant's home was 50 miles away from the court. So the finding that other people had traveled a half hour wasn't specific and related to my client's circumstances at the time. as you all know, termination of parental rights is to be based on the condition of the parent as they're found on the day of the trial. Again, this was well within the permanency timelines, and she was not.
But isn't the permanency timeline 1 year?
It is. It's
We're at 345 days. That's pretty close to a year.
Correct, but the court could have continued the hearing and still respected those timelines. Trial needs to start within at day 365 and then needs to conclude within 60 days of the commencement of trial. So it very well could have been continued to allow her to
appear. Well, it could have been, but the question is, did the trial court abuse its discretion? And how can we say it abused its discretion when it made the findings it did?
Correct. And I believe that the discretion, the abuse of discretion came in not considering the circumstances of my client. I know that where the courthouse was, there, the weather was fine, the roads were fine, but where she was 50 miles away, it wasn't. I believe that the court took past history, not the condition of my client on the day of the trial, her past history of failing to appear, and applied it to this day of the trial. And in doing so, abused its discretion. Because the conditions are to be as they're found on the day of the trial. Again, also other procedural issues. A default was not requested by counsel for the petitioner at the district court level. And so the court proceeded to default to sponte. The counsel for the appellant was not acknowledged and given the opportunity to argue. Only one witness was called for the agency. There was,
isn't that a different question than the question of whether it was a default hearing or not? I mean, we're looking at two different questions, correct?
Right, and this is a confusing default because, again, the agency didn't request it. The district court called it somewhat of a default, but then proceeded to conduct it procedurally as a default hearing and made its order on the basis of a default. So it wasn't conducted according to trial procedure. It was conducted according to default hearing procedure, and a default was never requested.
But if somebody doesn't show up, doesn't that result in a default?
Not necessarily. In a child protection matter, if counsel is present, counsel can continue to enter a denial and they can continue the hearing. It's entirely at the district court's discretion whether to continue the hearing. But again, a default was not requested. Trial could be held without her present. Trial wasn't held. A default hearing was conducted. But again, the request for default has to be made. And this court has found that if counsel doesn't request a default, the court cannot proceed sua sponte. Other circumstances here, the factual basis was not, it was a half day hearing. It was not presented with the specificity and gravity necessary to terminate parental rights. Again, the testimony of the guardian was not under oath. The one witness was called. At this hearing, the agency did not prove by clear and convincing evidence that it was in the child's best interest or that any of the statutory grounds had been met. It's my position, my client's position, that the court based all of the factual findings on the underlying CHIPS case and prior knowledge rather than taking a factual basis and testimony that day and evidence that proved any palpable unfitness or any reasonable efforts or any stay in foster care that was abandoned in foster care. So there was not a factual basis proven that day to the standard of proof. It was based on the court's prior impressions of the case, which was an abuse of discretion. Again, it was not conducted as a trial. It was conducted as a default hearing, which these procedures do allow for only evidence in support of the petition.
The concern I have about your argument on default, and I had to flip through your brief in order to make sure I recalled this. I mean, the matter started as a default, and it wasn't until, I'm reading now from your brief, it was during your lunch break that you got an email indicating that her car wouldn't start. I mean, so what did she, doesn't she have a telephone? wouldn't she have a means? I'd be more sympathetic to your case if there was some affirmative action that you could present us in terms of what she did instead of telling you the day before that she planned to come, but she was worried about weather.
And I did not represent appellant at the district court level, but based on that counsel's information, they did have the conversation the day before. She did plan to be there. She was concerned about the weather.
But you're conceding then there was no call to court the day of or nothing that would say, oh, gee, I'm stranded, my car doesn't start or the roads are bad or whatever, nothing like that.
I am not conceding.
Okay.
No, Your Honor, because she did call. She called counsel's office. She called the court. And that, I believe, is in the transcript as well. And that is in my brief. She had tried calling the court and couldn't get through to anyone. I don't know if she called court administration or chambers or who exactly she tried to reach out to. But
I don't see that in your brief, but I'll review the record. Thanks. Thank you.
Sure. So she did try contacting that morning and wasn't able to get through until around noon. So car trouble, once she got it started, it was just a snowball, pardon the weather term, but a domino effect of things that happened to her that morning that were beyond her control. But she did reach out and make those efforts. And in hearing that, that she was stuck in the snow, couldn't make any progress to get there, she asked to appear by Zoom and was denied by the district court. Now, I recognize that trials are to be conducted in person, but I believe that the appellant did make every effort she could to get there and to try to appear, but she was denied the opportunity to appear by Zoom, even in those extenuating circumstances, and to speak on her own behalf. Her attorney that day was not acknowledged to offer any kind of argument, which again, under default procedures is proper, but under trial procedures is not. So this quasi-trial slash default hearing, it didn't acknowledge, it wasn't until she asked to argue a closing argument that she was afforded the opportunity to do that. So there was just so many things procedurally wrong here. There's no reason that this trial couldn't have been continued within the timelines for another 20 days and so that Ms. Glynn could be heard. So what we're asking is that this be remanded to the district court so that a proper trial could be held where she can come and present her own testimony and her own evidence outside the default procedures in a real trial setting. I hesitate to use the word sham, but if this is to be considered a trial, it would be a sham. As a default proceeding, it is proper. However, there was no request for default. So again, it seems to me procedurally, the district court erred at several points, and in the interest of justice for the appellant, this should be sent back to the district court for a trial, for a proper trial. I apologize. We all know how this works. We have a way we think it's going to go, and then we go down different roads. Because this was held procedurally as a default, there was no opportunity for the appellant to call any sort of witnesses or to provide anything, any factual basis in her own defense. The guardian ad litem was not cross-examined by anybody. Again, she was not under oath. Because of the default procedure that was followed, there were no witnesses or evidence being able to be presented by the appellant. The hearing did not meet the legal standard for a grave matter, that is the termination of parental rights. I believe that is a due process violation. So in DF, the court found that due process requires reasonable notice, a timely opportunity for hearing, right to counsel, opportunity to present evidence, an impartial decision maker, and the right to a reasonable decision based solely on the record. And those are things that did not happen here. While appellant had notice and opportunity for a hearing and counsel, because it was held under a default procedure, she had no opportunity to present evidence. The decision maker was clearly not impartial, basing the majority of the factual basis on the underlying CHIPS case, and the reasonable decision was not based solely on the record. It was based primarily on, again, the underlying CHIPS case, not the record in the permanency case. The further,
the decision, let me ask this: did the appellant ever ask for a continuance at that hearing?
I believe in her in notifying the court that the appellant was not able to be there, Ms. Surhoff did request that the hearing be continued. And I need to look more closely.
Well, I guess that's what I was asking before in terms of how is this before us, but we'll check the record on and make that determination.
So, and I believe it, you will find it in the transcript that in notifying the court that counsel did request that a continuance be granted. I see I'm out of time.
Thank you, Ms. Thompson. You will have an opportunity for rebuttal argument. Counsel for respondent, you may introduce yourself and your client and present your argument.
Thank you, counsel, your honors. My name is Nicholas Anderson. I'm the Cottonwood County Attorney. I represent Des Moines Valley Health and Human Services in this agency. When the judge at the beginning of the trial introduced this as somewhat of a partial default, I just took that to mean that appellant wasn't going to be present. I took that to mean that I still had to present my case, and that all other procedures would have continued normally. And that's what I did. I presented my case as the parent appellant really didn't do anything for the whole year. I only had one witness to call. I called the witness who testified that in that nearly 1 year, appellant never saw the child in person. I didn't have any visit supervisors to call, that she did not address her mental health issues. As she didn't do that, there were no therapists for me to call. She didn't address her chemical health issues. As she didn't do that, there were no treatment providers for me to call. She didn't address her medication issues. Because of that, there were no psychiatrists to call. She didn't address her domestic relationship issues. Because of that, there were no victim advocates to call. Realistically, when a parent doesn't do anything, the only witness I'm going to have is the social worker to come in and testify about his attempts to get her to comply with the case plan. And that's exactly what I did. So I didn't take it to be a default hearing. Now, the crux of appellant's argument is that she did not appear and that somehow violated her due process rights. I did not see any requests for continuance either at the beginning of the trial or after lunch. I would point out that on pages 102 and 103 of the transcript is where 102 and 103 of the transcript is where the
Mr. Anderson, let me interrupt you just a minute to say that we do not, Ms. Thompson, we do not allow argument by the chat feature, especially while opposing counsel is arguing. So please, we're going to disregard that. Please do not do that for the remainder of the argument. I apologize.
Oh, I apologize. My client was texting me.
Okay. So I understand it's a mistake. Okay, I understand. Thank you, Ms. Thompson. Mr. Anderson, I apologize for interrupting, but you may continue.
Thank you. That's just the portion of the transcript where I don't believe there was a continuance ever requested. So I do not believe that issue was preserved for appeal. As has been talked about, no continuance was requested, none was granted. The judge made a number of findings regarding the weather. There were no advisories. There were no road closed. She had 4 to 5 hours to get to the court. A lot of people traveled at least a half hour to get to the court. Zoom, in prior hearings, appellant had difficulty getting difficulty with Zoom. So she had been previously ordered to appear in court in the past. Her failure to appear at this trial was consistent with her prior actions. She was not present at the contested emergency protective care hearing on February 2nd. She did not appear at the review hearings on September 19th and December 13th. Each of those hearings, they all went on without her. The orders in this case each stated that if she failed to appear at a hearing, the court could still hold the hearings without you and take action against her, including permanent severance of her parental rights. She clearly had all notices that she needed to make the decision whether to appear or not. Again, I believe that that generally the courts will not address constitutional issues such as due process that were not raised in the district court. I don't believe that due process was raised in the district court, so it's my contention that it has been waived. Appellant did have the opportunity to present evidence and call witnesses, specifically on page 114 of the transcript. The court said, any additional witnesses to me? I said, no, Your Honor. The court said, all right, Ms. Surhoff. She said, no, Your Honor. Then the court said, Ms. Nordahl, who's the guardian ad litem, do you intend to testify or call witnesses? That address to Ms. Surhoff, as somebody who was there, I know that that specifically was requesting if Ms. Surhoff had any witnesses to call. She did not, obviously, as her client was not there. So I would argue that that even if the court does analyze the due process argument, that it must fail. She did have the opportunity to call witnesses, present evidence. She did have the opportunity to cross-examine witnesses. She cross-examined my witness. And that was on pages 103 to 112 of the transcript. She did have the opportunity to present argument. She did that on page 116 of the transcript. So it's my position that her due process rights were vindicated and that the court should affirm the lower court's decision. I think the evidence is fairly clear and one-sided that that it was proven beyond my clear and convincing evidence. So I don't intend to address that any further here. I think it's pretty well spelled out in my brief. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Ms. Thompson, you have an opportunity for rebuttal argument.
Thank you, Your Honor. Everything Mr. Anderson just stated again was out of the underlying CHIPS case. As found on the day of the hearing, Ms. Glynn was not able to attend in person. She was denied the opportunity to appear by Zoom. And just as a matter of reasonableness, affording her that simple opportunity to dial in when she was not able to be in person would have been an absolutely reasonable thing to do on the district court's part. And in not doing so or not continuing, the court abused its discretion. The notice to the court that was given by counsel at the district court level for the appellant that she was not able to make it in person was a de facto request to continue. The fact that the agency only had one witness to call, I believe, indicates more than anything, a lack of reasonable efforts on the agency's part, that there was no one else involved in this case but the social worker. So again, I think it is, it seems like a simple question. It was such a short hearing. It seems that a parent who stands to lose a relationship with their child permanently on an involuntary basis should be afforded the opportunity to speak. To simply let her dial in by Zoom that day would have been, would have made it certain that she was given her due process here. I think that basing it on the fact that she had had trouble with Zoom in the past is an inadequate basis to deny her the opportunity to speak. There would have been no inconvenience to the court or anyone else to allow this respondent mother the opportunity to testify that day. As far as the agency statements that she had done nothing in the case plan, it would have given her the opportunity to tell the court that day all the things that she had completed. Again, that may speak to the agency's efforts, whether or not they did their own due diligence in finding out whether she had addressed domestic violence issues or chemical dependency issues or mental health issues. They did not seek out that information. She had attempted to provide it, but the court made a reasonable efforts finding as well, based on limited information presented only by the agency. So in that way, it was conducted as a default hearing. That only evidence in favor of the petition was presented, and the court in its order found involuntary termination by default. So regardless of counsel for the agency's impressions that he was to go ahead and present his case, the court proceeded as if this were a default hearing and made a ruling based on a default hearing. And it is simply procedurally improper to have done so. The court abused its discretion, and this matter should be remanded to the district court for a proper trial where these fundamental rights of parenthood can be argued for on behalf of the appellant. Thank you, Your Honor. I have nothing further.
Thank you, Ms. Thompson. Thank you to both attorneys for your arguments. The case is now deemed submitted, and the court will issue its opinion in writing within 45 days in a case of this type.